Good afternoon, friends, and thanks for participating in one of these board-sponsored workshops. This is considering renewing the covenant, what that says to all of us. And let me tell you a little genesis on this story. A little over a year and a half ago, I started just adding things to my tagline on my email: live boldly, live bravely. And then I added live bodaciously. And we had a lot of fun with that, and I gave a few talks about that around the country at various congregations, and it sort of caught on. And I was at an installation of a minister friend in the Northeast, and I was approached by someone who said, "Are you really ready to be bodacious?" And I said, "Yeah." And we set a date to talk by phone later. And out of that, it was the Reverend Sue Phillips, and out of that came a very spirited conversation that led to some of my language in last year's General Assembly report that I made, asking us to imagine what it would be like if people entered into covenant in congregations and not signed the membership book, or that wasn't the focus. Or imagine what our association might look like if we didn't have these rigid rules of membership. What would it look like to be a network of networks living out our mission in the world? So I challenged the Board of Trustees, and they approved the establishment of a task force, some of whom you are seeing on the dais now, and will be presented in just a moment. And we asked the Reverend Dr. Susan Ritchie to chair this task force. And those conversations have been ongoing for the better part of this year. And so we've sort of ruminated with it, and we want you to ruminate with us. So there'll be you've got some work to do this afternoon in reacting to what we're going to present and giving us some feedback on how we might go forward with this. But as I should always tell gatherings like this session is being recorded. So please use the microphones as you have clarifying questions or ultimately move back into the full session. And just ask the presenters, if you're hearing a question sort of thrown out from the audience, these folks know how to do this, but repeat the question so that we can all hear. So I'm ready. I've done the hard work. I'm the visionary type person, and I throw it to people who can really get the work done. So Reverend Ritchie, could you sort of take it from here and sort of talk about covenant? We talk about that so much. What does it really mean in our work here?
Beautiful set of questions. Thank you. Right. So as we've been talking with folks about the charge of our committee, and just to kind of be a little more explicit about that, Jim had charged the committee with specifically looking at what would it be like if we were related to each other and to our congregations, not just through this act of signing the membership book, but through a more robust relationship of making promises to each other and redefining and defining our mutual purpose. And what if our congregations had that same relationship in order to form the association? But a piece of feedback that we've been getting as we've been talking about that is that we might be using this word covenant in kind of an insider baseball way, like we imagine everybody understands what that means, when in fact perhaps we have very different ideas about that one to another. So I wanted to do just a really quick introduction to the notion of covenant, talk about how it informs our work. Then I'm going to ask my task force members to introduce themselves and explain why they have enthusiasm and energy for this work. But then we're going to let you all do some deliberation on this charge so that we might be fully informed by the fullest vision of our democracy. So I'm teaching a polity class right now inside of the General Assembly, and so
what's
the question
polity?
Thank you, Dave. polity is, of course, a word we use a lot, and it's a word that rarely excites enthusiasm as a word. But it is so central, you know. So if you look in the dictionary, you know, it says something like polity is about governance and political organization and structure, which of course it is. But it's the most fascinating thing in the world because it's really about how do we want to be together, what are our relationships one to another, and what do we do about our resources, and how do we share our resources, and by what authority do we do that?
So because we are a congregational polity, that means that it is the congregations themselves that have the final power and control. But I want to give you a really brief history lesson, because I'm just all history addicted. So the reason we care about this word covenant is it goes all the way back to our spiritual ancestors from the radical piece of the Reformation. So the first wave of the Reformation, folks figured out that they weren't really fond of how the church was doing its business and that some of those practices were actually corrupt, and so they wanted to reform the corruption in the church. And so then the next wave of the Reformation was looking at whether the doctrines in the church themselves had actually at some point become corrupt. The most radical wave of the Reformation was to ask about the structure of the church. How do you organize power inside of the church, and what makes a church's power authentic? So it was our spiritual ancestors who got really nervous about hierarchical structures of power that gave a great deal of power to a small number of individuals without much accountability. They were furthermore convinced that when you do it, those individuals with a great deal of power are going to be motivated to create alliances with other kinds of power for oppressive ends. So that's where our spiritual ancestors became concerned about the separation of church and state, believing that, again, those powers needed to be distinct. Okay, so they now believe that, right? So they believe that the church has to be distinct from the state, and the church has to be separate from a hierarchical pattern of just a few individuals in power. So how do you form a church? By what authority can you say we now make a church? Because in the past, it had either been the bishops granting the authority to form the church or the state granting the authority to church. It was our folks who said that it is actually the agreement of people who agreed to be together in church membership. The covenant of church members creates the church. So that was the first use of this word covenant, that it was the bind and bound boundary and creation of relationship among the people himself that was the highest, not only the highest political authority, but the highest spiritual authority, and really the only spiritual authority. Indeed, James Luther Adams, who's a contemporary theologian who does a lot on covenant, says that it was in this decision that we made our first commitment to democracy, because he said as soon as you decide that you are bound together by covenant, you've made the judgment of saying that the voice of truth could speak from any member inside of that covenant. And once you understand that, you have an obligation to listen most carefully to the voices of the minority. So anyway, covenant was our original glue for creating our churches. And covenants are, you know, in their theological essence, they are promises, but they're very specific kinds of promises. For one thing, they're enduring promises in the sense that, you know, often people say that if you break a promise, that promise is over. But if you break the covenant, your obligation inside of covenant is to re-covenant, to re-establish relationship and find new grounding for that way of relating with each other. And covenants, of course, are also about shared purpose. And covenants always involve some sort of pact, not just with the other people in the covenant, but with an idea about what can transform and sustain the highest forces of the holy, however it is that you understand that. An example of this is the Puritans actually had, okay, I'm the only one who's nostalgic about the Puritans, and I'm probably the only one that thinks that the Puritans had a really cute and romantic idea about marriage. But because the Puritans really believed that any time you entered into a covenant, you formed a church, their understanding about marriage was that marriages formed a little church. Yes. that when you made that kind of serious, enduring promise with another human being, you were not just outlining a kind of legalistic agreement with that one other person, but that you were creating this relationship that was dedicated to a higher purpose, and through that very act of dedication was also related to with all of the creative and transforming powers of love. It's pretty cool, really, right? So there is that piece inside of our theology and our polity too right now, that we do believe that when we make these kind of promises to each other, they're not just legally binding or not legally binding agreements that we make about our behavior, but that we dedicate ourselves through a purpose to this very transforming and sustaining power. So what's our state of covenant right now? Well, so our state of covenant right now is that as member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, we covenant to affirm and promote, and you all recognize that, right? The opening statement to our purposes, principles and purposes. That is a covenant that does form the basis for the Unitarian Universalist Association, but it's not a very robust covenant, right? It's something that you can only be said to have signed off on in the most kind of remote way. It's not something we renew from time to time. So the exciting charge of this task force is to wonder what it would be like if instead of our congregations being related through these very mechanical kinds of ways, what if our relationship that forms the association is one of mutual discernment about purpose, mutual agreement about what each one of us wants to contribute to the whole, and what each one of us needs to receive from the whole in order to achieve that purpose? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and end my remarks right there, because something that we've learned on this task force is that we're all dedicated to the notion of covenant, but we speak about our passion for covenant with very different voices. And it only took us two or three meetings to figure out that might actually be part of the point. So I'm going to ask my task force to introduce themselves, talk about their commitment to covenant, and then we have an exercise to do together. Do we want to be linear? Sure. Tandy, do you mind starting us off?
I was swooning about your Puritan marriage churches. Love that. Thank you. I'm Tandy Rogers, Reverend Tandy Rogers. I serve as your innovation and network specialist for the UUA for only a couple more days, and then I go out to serve our congregations in the Pacific Western region. My congregation, my home congregation, has a chalice lighting that I have found to be one of the most covenantal chalice lightings I've found. And I light a chalice when I sit down to my work for the UUA, and I conjure up the congregations and the leaders that I will be working for during that day. And I light my chalice, and I say, I light this chalice in deep respect for the mystery and holiness of life, in honor and gratitude for those who have gone before, whose shoulders I stand on, with love and compassion for those who dwell among us, with whom I travel this path, and with hope and faith for the generations to come. May my work today make their way more joyful and easier. So I bring in both my covenant, our covenant is with life itself, and our ancestors, may we make them proud, and those people here, and then also those people who aren't here yet. And so I hold that really nimbly, knowing that I'm not alone and that this work is really big, that it matters. I have a, if I were queen of the universe, General Assembly would be less of the business, and I'm a total geek. I know, I'm a geek. I show up for session, I watch the votes, I love it, but I think if we're really going to grow this faith and make impact, what I have seen over and over again, the things that transform us, are the connections with each other and the stories. So what if we had a General Assembly where mission partners, not just our current congregations, but the people who want to build this better world together, come together to share stories and resources of what's working and share the challenges and witness to each other for the times that we experiment and it doesn't quite work. So I've got two examples of showing up. And before I die, I would love for us to be known as the people who show up, the yellow shirts. Now, I got a call yesterday from one of my United Methodist Church friends in the Pacific Northwest. And I don't know if you know this. They're meeting in conferences. They just had their big conference. And now they're meeting in smaller conferences. And they are talking about splitting over the welcoming or non-welcoming of our LGBTQ siblings in faith. I guess in our case, our cousins in faith. And they called me to say, we're in a lot of pain. Can you mobilize the yellow shirts to just have come and be our witness and hold us? And I had to write back and say, most of the yellow shirts are in Columbus, Ohio right now. We're doing the best we can with those who are behind. But the reason she called is the Reconciling Ministries, which is their in-house LGBTQ support network, called me, oh gosh, about 6 months ago and said, we're having a conference. We're already getting hate calls from within the church. Would you come and just hold the space for us? I could not, my dreams had come true that we had been asked by another tradition to come show up to be mission partners. So this covenant, I think, is not just between us, but it's in that larger. So that's one example. And we did hold the space, and it was beautiful, and we were ready. We had 8 different congregations of 20 people who showed up to hold the space for the United Methodist Church Reconciling Ministries in the Northwest. And we'll keep doing that. We're going to keep doing that. Thank you. The other example, and you can do this too. So my little congregation, who remain nameless, I'm their affiliated community minister, we had a riot of bad behavior within our congregation that was really dragging down our board of directors, and they were exhausted. The neighboring congregation's board sent a pizza to our board of directors during their meeting and a note that said, this is to nourish your bodies. If you need help nourishing your spirits, we're right down the road. Right, you can do that. Whatever, like if you're a worship associate, you can reach out to your neighboring congregations and say, hey, let's get together for a training. Let's do this stuff together. What I know in my bones is we are better together, and that is at the core of our covenant.
Good afternoon. I'm David Miller. I am the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Fairfax, Virginia. It's a pleasure to be here. I've really enjoyed this. So fast forward from the Reformation to the 1950s. Most of our congregations are set up in a 1950s-ish mid-20th century design. Set up in a certain type of system, institution, set up in a certain type of hierarchy, and not so much nimble, and not including more or less the differences that we now face in the 21st century. So I look at that and I think, you know, what did the Cambridge platform say? How's that for a 21st century thought? And we look at the Cambridge platform much like we look at any other scripture. My professor in college used to call it proof texting. We pull out what we want and we give the rest away. So with the Cambridge platform, we pulled out a bunch of stuff that we kind of wanted. And it was about the independence and individualism of our congregations. And we sort of forgot about the mutual accountability that's called for in the Cambridge platform. And as I got into being a Unitarian Universalist, and as I got into congregational life, and as I got into being a consultant for the Pacific Southwest District with boards and congregations that were struggling, what I began to realize is that we have suffered for a very long time from boundaries of our own making that are antithetical to what I believe the spirit of the Cambridge platform actually was about. So as we're struggling as congregations, as in our relationship with 25 Beacon,
24 Farnsworth,
I know, but the older style is 25 Beacon, is that we have separated ourselves beyond what we are able to, beyond a way for us to look together to what our vision and mission for our whole faith tradition is, which I call healing, wholeness, and transformation for ourselves, each other, and the planet. So if we're actually all looking at that, but we're all doing it in such different and separate ways, it's a struggle if we're not in some way helping each other and crossing boundaries. So as a minister in the San Diego area, we created this whole cluster organization that other people are starting to do and have done in other areas that really was about crossing boundaries beyond what we had ever thought to help each other as boards in social justice work, to move beyond traditional boundaries of congregational life. And I'm not saying that there, I created a document that had five different stages of that. The highest form being merger, which some people have done. But the point of it is that if we don't look at ourselves as a tradition in covenant with each other, if we rely so much on the individualization of ourselves getting our needs met or our congregations just getting their needs met, we are not facing the struggles of the 21st century. We are facing the struggles of the 1950s. So I believe it's really important for us to look at this idea of membership and covenant and look at a new way to evolve how we work together. So we're not members expecting someone to provide us services, but we're in covenant figuring out how we're all going to do it together. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Shade. I'm a retired UU minister, and I write a blog, The Lively Tradition, and I take up invitations to go to meetings and be on task force in the desperate effort to avoid facing not having anything to do in retirement. So I haven't had a day off since I retired, but here I am. There was a guy named Paul, wrote a long time ago, and he said, "What I would do, I do not do. And what I would not do, I do. And then he asked the question in his language, who will save me from this body of sin? And I, you know, while I may not quite take that language about the body of sin necessarily accurate, you know, as the way he meant it, I do realize that both myself and the congregations I've served and been members of, what they would like to do, they don't do. And what they would like not to do, they find themselves doing. And so the question is, how do we get out of that? There was another guy named Paul, or at least he was one of four named Paul, who said we get by with a little help from our friends. And that's a new joke, that's right. I know there's very few in the world. So that gets us to covenanting. I would be a better person if you expected more of me. Yes. And I suspect you would be a better person. You would do better. You would keep your pronouns straight, because it hurts people when you get them wrong, if people expected more of you and held you accountable. So how do we build a system where we, as Unitarian Universalists, as congregations and as people and as all these bodies, can move to expecting more and better of each other? Because we have 50 years experience of knowing what this level of commitment brings us, which is good, but which we also know is not enough. So, to me, I envision Well, in order for you and me to be in this kind of relationship of mutual accountability, one, we have to agree to be in it. And how would we make that agreement? We would have to come to a point where we understand that we're working toward the same purposes. And that's not, you know, when I say, what are my purposes in life, and I, you know, bring out the Hallmark card of, you know, good intention, that's not, you know, and you have one too. We could compare those. I don't think it would be a very deep agreement. So I think that what we need to do is to learn how to share our purposes, our practical, real purposes. The real purpose of most churches is to conduct worship. That's where 90% of their money is going, and their time and their energy and attention. What's the real purpose of your church, the real purpose of your life? And to compare them. If you show me yours, I'll show you mine. And then to say, how can we start to bring these purposes, these missions into alignment so that we're working together toward a common goal and that we can then agree in mutual respect and equality and correctly situated in the power dynamics that rule our world, that we will work together and hold each other accountable. And by doing that, we build a deeper covenant than we have had before. And so it will take to build the kind of covenantal relationship that will move Unitarian Universalism forward. It will take hundreds, thousands of smaller covenants between congregations, between people, between different organizations, between different interest groups, all comparing our purposes, our missions, declaring ourselves mission partners, and agreeing to build toward working together. So the covenant we're looking forward to is a covenant layered of dozens and dozens, thousands, hundreds of smaller agreements so that each of us can be, and each of our organizations, our congregations, can be what we want to be.
Can you guys try this after me? In the name of love. G-A in the name of love. That's my prayer. That's my prayer. That when we come to G-A, it's like, we are coming in the name of love, to experience love, to share love, to grow in love. And that is what I think the road of covenant can lead us toward deeper and deeper. I was really taken aback when, on my way out the door of seminary, my last paper... In one of my last classes, I don't know how I got around to not reading Bonhoeffer until the last paper of the last, but Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, one of the great Christian theologians. And I read these words off the page, just came, like, just about hit me like right square in the face. God hates visionary dreaming. God hates visionary dreaming, he said. And I'm like, whoa. Tandy knows, ouch, because she's another visionary dreamer over there. And I'm like, that's kind of what I'm building my ministry around. What's this about? But I had a sinking feeling in my stomach, too, that there was some real truth here, because I was feeling pretty black and blue. I was also coming to the end of just my first year of the journey of creating the Sanctuary Boston. By the way, I'm Dave Ruffin, and I'm currently serving as the assistant minister at All Souls Tulsa, and prior to that, I had about 2.5 year journey in founding with a wonderful group of seminarians and other young adults and musicians this alternative community called the Sanctuary Boston, which was very much a vision-oriented project. But the reason why I bring it up is because, and I'm even going to take a step back here, I envisioned the Sanctuary Boston because my experience of a lot of Unitarian Universalism was we had all these great ideas about what we wanted to do in the world, like justice and so much great you know, talk and really great like-minded people, but I wasn't getting the experience at the level of the heart that I deeply craved to be able to actually show up for that. So I often ended up feeling kind of bad about myself as I limped along trying to do this good work that we all believed in. And for me, I thought it was like, well, it's our worship. Our worship really just isn't coming alive. And so I focused a lot of my energy there. But then worship turned into my great idea. Worship turned into the great idea that I was so committed to that I lost the engine of what it was that would enable me to make this great change and shift. What I think Bonhoeffer was talking about, what I came to learn, is that the things that we would do, we do not do, and the things that we would not do, we do. The human will is weak. Just look at how we handle our New Year's resolutions. And so we need something bigger to hold us. What covenant does, I believe, is not just hold us to a higher standard. It creates the space for the power in us, in between us, in the holy spaces that we don't understand and name differently, to show up. It creates a holy container where we can open our hearts and find what meets us in the gap between what we dream and what we can actually do and become together. So covenant, I think we are on the journey to maybe discovering together. It's all right. It happens to all of us. Don't stress. We'll just wait. We'll just wait. It's all good. Because we want you to be with us and not worried. Welcome back. It's all good. That what we I think are on the cusp of discovering together is that covenant is not just a means that we would be able to accomplish all of our wonderful missions so much better with. Covenant is also our end. This is the world that we're dreaming of, a world in which we are in relationship, showing up in love for one another with such a deep commitment in our hearts that that power that is beyond us will show up to fill in the gaps and help us actually create that world. Covenant is both end and means. Covenant is who we are. And, I just think that's a really exciting prospect of us aligning our structures to give our hearts a chance to really live into that together. So in the spirit of covenant being both maybe our more and more our potential and our means together, we'd like to invite you to enter into some short-term covenant with a few others gathered here. We're going to break into small groups to explore, reflect on, and connect around some of the kinds of questions that we have been asking ourselves and one another. And let me just check process-wise. Susan, was the thought that we would break into groups, come back, and then both share and have a little bit more discussion, go until 4:15?
Yes.
Rather than doing further commenting amongst ourselves now?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll talk amongst ourselves and figure out when we're gathering you back, but probably what you would have is, three to 4 minutes, really, each of you, to respond, and then at least a couple of minutes of silence that you could share to get connected. But maybe we might give you another round, a little bit more time. So anyway, that's just a little bit. We're going to break into small groups, a little bit of a sense of the expectation of time. But what I want to invite of you, and would you like to pass these out? Thank you. So what I want to invite you to is to covenant with those that you gather, and well, just groups of four or five would be great, nearby you, and covenant to listen and share together in a way that will allow both your head and hearts, maybe even your souls, to show up for a deeper conversation. I'm talking about this as if it's a foreign thing, but this is Unitarian Universalist community. So hands up if you've been in a small group or a covenant group or otherwise had a small group experience as your time in Unitarian Universalist. Okay, great. See, it's a core practice. So we want to use that right now to reflect on the practice of covenant itself. So here are the core practices that we just want to offer for the purpose of our shared exploration now. To listen, to take time to listen to your own heart as well as those in the group. To speak from your own experience. And if you're following along on the sheet now, I'm just doing these bullet points here. Try starting with a feeling or a personal story rather than an idea. Try using an I statement to help with that. So I feel that sometimes I'm like da-da-da, as opposed to you know how people are da-da-da-da, or you know how we use the practice to deepen your own reflection. So really set that intention. This is an opportunity for you to go deeper in your own understanding and reflection. And to help with that, allow space between comments for that reflection. And keeping that intention more on your own heart, resist the impulse to convince somebody else or to fix or edit their comments. And then seek balance of sharing in your group, remembering that some of the introverts in your group may wish to use some of their, quote, sharing time for more silent reflection. So try leaving space for all to have the option to speak, at least, but particularly as a way to begin, but not necessarily take silence as opting out of showing up. Maybe more silence is what they need. So some people are already kind of gathering. Can I invite you to just, before we go, just raise your hand if you have a question about what's about to happen, because I want to clarify that before we break up. Do you want to come up to the mic to ask your question?
Are we going to reconvene to discuss after 4 o'clock? Because I believe that the action of public witness starts at 4 o'clock.
I thought we were a 3 to 4:15 workshop.
Five? Oh, it's at 5. Okay, never mind.
Good question to ask. You don't have to hold that anxiety anymore. And another question.
How does this inform is this group supposed to reimagine how we do GA, restructure it in some way?
Part of what may happen if we move away from a membership model to a model in which we're bound in covenant is that in that journey, we also realize that we could use our time together at GA to be covenantally discerning the things that matter most to us. And that might look a little bit differently than the way we're... So that's entered into our conversation, and it might enter yours, but at this point, it's just sort of, huh. Is that a fair answer to that question? I really should have punted. No. I just happened to have the mic. Susan.
Right. I would just add that what we're imagining is bringing to GA next year some specific proposals that we'd like folks to maybe act upon. But we're not specifically charged with looking at GA, but it's a piece of the puzzle. Because if we were less focused on our business and our bylaws, what we would do at GA would be a more fulsome deliberation than we're currently engaging with, which is why our partnership with our moderator has been so incredibly important. And in other ways, Moderator Key has already tried to model more complete kinds of conversations at General Assembly. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure I understood it.
So if there aren't any further questions, find 3 or 4 other people to sit down with, please, and find a space that you're comfortable in. Don't worry about moving chairs. You can, if you would like to, just return them. And let's all take some time. I'm going to go ahead. The directions say read aloud or quietly. I'm going to go ahead and suggest we just read the questions quietly and then maintain silence. And I'll go ahead and suggest a time when you can begin sharing. So we'll really enter this time with some space to get a little bit deeper, checking in with our own hearts as well as with these questions.
So here's the question we're going to ask of you. Well, I'm going to ask two questions if we have time. And we're going to ask that if you have an answer to the question, that you would be kind enough to come to the microphone so we can record the answer. And the first question, and it's for anyone who wants to speak, did anything anyone else say make you think differently? Did anything anyone else say invite you, and then, I'm not saying make you, like, I'm going to make you think differently, but I'm going to invite you to, did it affect the way you were thinking about something that you thought was, oh, to be pedestrian, an aha moment or some sort of surprise? And if you would be kind enough to share that with us, please come to the microphone.
My name is Soren Hansen from West Shore UU Church in Cleveland, Ohio. And one of the participants, John, told me that he didn't want to be a member because we were not living up to the covenant in his church, or he was not. And I was struck, you know, when you're a member, you're done, and you don't have to do anything else, right? That really blew my mind.
Thank you for sharing that. You just blew my mind.
Hi, I'm David Soliday from the Delaware UU Fellowship, just north of here, further than north. similar to the last comment, I had realized a new perspective on one of a person who's been really involved in our fellowship, but he hasn't been a member for several years, but he still gives services, he still does announcements, he's still a part of the covenant. And I hadn't seen a way of talking about that, or, you know, maybe not devaluing, but putting another perspective on all the other people that say, well, he should become a member.
Thank you.
Faith, First UU, Columbus, Ohio. Someone in my group mentioned, I thought a really important point is when we talk about accountability, how do we frame that in such a way that people can see it beyond the bounds of we're telling you this is how we're going to discipline you when you do wrong? So how can we think of it in a more inviting way?
I guess my comment starts from there. Someone in my group talked about how we are non-creedal, and that a covenant is oftentimes put in terms of a discipline, you know, and the rules. But she offered another approach to covenanting, which begins with the story of who I am, and then who I am with you, and then how we are together. And it's an evolving story, and I really like that.
In these moments, I always hear the Jeopardy theme in my head. Anyone else like to speak to the surprise? Oh, we do.
I'm Jim from UU Church of Ventura, California. I wouldn't call it a big revelation or an aha, but just sort of something, oh, that hadn't occurred to me before. We talked about the variety of the many different levels and types of covenants we make, including sometimes where a congregation may have a covenant that is a group of words that they recite regularly, but it becomes kind of like when we were kids, we said the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, it was just a number of syllables that followed one another without much thought, and I hadn't really thought about the way that some of these ritual recitations can lose their meaning.
Hi, I'm John. And I was talking in our group about frustration I have sometimes and we have a covenant, but people don't seem to be behaving accountable. And, you know, the difference between, you know, a paid kind of job and there's other clout to kind of enforce accountability. And what do you do here? And a member from our group, when it was his turn to talk, he brought up about basically you want to call people in rather than call them out. And it was like, yeah, because that's, I know that. That's when I'm talking with people about race and conversations we've had in our at our church about what white people can do with the Black Lives Matter movement. Calling people in is now common sense now that, you know, and I know to do it there, but I'd kind of forgotten about, you know, hey, maybe that makes sense everywhere.
Nice. Thank you.
Peter Candace, UU Congregation of the Low Country, and it was not in our small group conversation, not that that wasn't great, but it was the whole group, and what David said about covenant being more, not as much about the means, which is how I had been thinking about it, because I looked at it as a means, as a tool, as a way of being so that we could get somewhere, but rather as an end, so that that's something that we live into and makes, and so that was, thank you.
Apparently they're very happy about that too, so thanks very much.
I'm Marguerite Mills from First UU Nashville, Tennessee, and there was someone in our group who voiced some discomfort with the whole process in ways that I don't need to go into at this point, but I'm very grateful that she trusted us with that and reminded us that that's where some people are, and we need perhaps to go where we had not realized we needed to go to meet her.
I'm Denise Rimes from First UU Church in Richmond, Virginia. One thing that's surprising me that I'm hearing in these report outs is what I think might be a distinction between a covenant, a broad covenant, and a behavioral covenant. And the way that I distinguish between the two, the behavioral covenant is where the accountability and perhaps recourse comes from. I was raised in the Jewish tradition, so the concept of covenant is pretty familiar to me. God takes care of his chosen people, and his chosen people, you know, follow the Ten Commandments and all the things that come out of the New Testament, and things stay in balance. And when they get out of balance, we got a chance to get them back in balance. And I think that the kind of covenant that we are talking, that I heard that we were talking about, has to do with the sense that we all want to make this world a better place. And doing it together makes it that much more powerful. And as a result of changing the world for the good, we get that back tenfold. There's the covenant. It seems maybe oversimplified to me, but if we could truly live into that, there's the covenant. And if you cut off my hand, I couldn't talk.
That is not part of the covenant.
It looked like I was going to be tall enough from far away. Hello, good afternoon. I'm Camila.
Hi.
So highlighting some of the things that my group talked about, somebody already mentioned one of the key points is like looking at membership versus covenantal relationship, which totally blew my mind. But something else we were talking about, we happen to have a few religious educators in the group. I do youth ministry. And just thinking about growing up in the UU church and being in youth group and just realizing that, like, covenant was totally normal for me and, like, it was UUism, and I never thought that that wasn't a thing until I started interacting more with the adults in the congregation.
Right.
So, which is like, you know, I'm not, you know, that's just true. When you sign the membership book, you're not like, here's the covenant. We made this covenant for the whole congregation, at least in my experience. So that's something that I actually have communicated with my membership and stewardship director person of, like, when we do these welcome workshops, when we do these things where people come in, are we talking about covenant? Something else that came up in the group was like, you know, when we're talking about covenant, are we looking to create something that's, you know, are we focusing on keeping the lights on? Are we focusing on building the relationship and looking at how our movement, how our faith is growing and changing? And, you know, sometimes, yes, of course, people need to keep the lights on. They want to keep that space that they have, and they want to make that be the sacred space that they have. And some groups, you know, they can't keep the lights on, and all they have is that the relationship that they have with one another. So really looking at, as we're building covenant, and I know I think someone just mentioned, like, there's a this kind of a covenant and this kind of a covenant. And I've been in part of dialogues like that before too, but I think at this point in time, I'm like, it's all covenanting. And it's just like, what's guidelines versus building relationship versus policy, and really trying to make those distinct. The last thing I will say is recently, all too late, I would say, is my staff developed a staff covenant. And in my district, or now region, but in my district-y cluster, talking about how we can do a covenant with each other as religious professionals in the same cluster. Maybe we should have a covenant together. And hopefully that'll also help break down all the individualization, isolation, and invite us to work more together, to be better together.
Better together. Thank you so much. Thanks for all your beautiful input. Susan, do you want to talk about where we go from here or what else is going on at the General Assembly as we close?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
So we have an experiment plan for general session tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Sorry, I'm in that General Assembly time-space thing where, you know, the time-space continuum is warped. Saturday morning, as the last part of general session, we're going to present just a little bit about the work of our task force. But then we're going to do a grand experiment together, which is our attempt to try to create a microcosm of experience of what a General Assembly might look like if we've made a complete cultural transition to thinking in terms of covenant and re-covenant. So we have trained facilitators who are going to break out into different groups and ask the delegates at General Assembly to not just vote up or down on something, not just run back and forth between the pro and con microphones, but actually do some theological, cultural, and relational sharing about purpose and how that purpose might inform how we are all together. So thank you so much for spending some of your time with us, and you can expect to hear from our task force. We're taking it on the road now for the next year to get feedback from different covenanted communities, so we might be in your neighborhood, and we'll make another official report out at General Assembly next year. But thank you all so much for coming. I hope you have a great rest of your day.